Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to this again. Yay! Another edition of the SPT podcast with myself, Jim Marshall, and my excellent colleague,
Aidan Sumia. How are you doing, Stu? You're such a tit.
In the other side of the microphone is Aidan Tully. Yeah, I've had too much caffeine. I haven't had enough caffeine, in fact. That's the problem. I need more caffeine.
Yeah, you're just trying to survive. You're trying to find some energy somewhere else, aren't you?
I'm counteracting the lack of caffeine in my life right now. I don't know why I've got a lack of caffeine. Actually, you know what, right? Where was it? Oh, it was in Tesco. I found an advent calendar with different coffee every day.
Oh.
Yeah, so my Nespresso machine. So first thing in the morning, lovely little different flavour, different notes of coffee in the morning. Mmm, perfect. Mmm, perfect. No chocolate, though.
I was going to say, are any of these a mocha, or is it always just coffee?
No, it's Nespresso.
No chocolate. You
know, sorry, people. This is obviously, but this is important for coaches out there. The realm and the world of coffee is crucial. No, do you know what, right? I used to have a Dolce Gusto machine, which you do make, like, lattes. Flat whites, mochas, cappuccinos, whatever you wanted. It had like two little pods. One was the milk, one was whatever the flavor or chocolate or whatever, the coffee. Now, unfortunately, for some strange reason, I'm not entirely sure why, I thought, no, I'm going to go and get an espresso machine. And basically all an espresso is just coffee.
That's it. Just as an espresso.
Yeah, right. Pretty much you can get a little bit of, you can change the amount of water that comes through to make it a lot longer, whatever it is, or whatever. But effectively that, yeah. So then I had to buy an extra milk frother. Effectively now I have what essentially is probably like a flat white / latte every morning. Like, I've got some like lovely flavored coffee, lovely notes of coffee, have some frothy milk. I mean, I probably just add water like a normal coffee, like an Americano, but. I mean, that's just not life, is it? That's not the choice.
No, you don't want that.
No,
if you're going to make coffee at home like that and you're going to go to that extent, you need a proper latte. You need to do a proper froth, right? Yeah.
So that's at the moment, I'm trying to become my own little barista and do that. Yeah, so I'm trying to make different coffees every morning. I'm not having much luck, though. They're all exactly the same coffee. It's just coffee, frothy milk. That's it.
I'm not the biggest coffee drinker in the world, but I'm a bit of a weirdo. I love the flavor of coffee, but I don't like hot coffee.
You've got issues.
I know, right? I love iced coffee. My favorite ice cream is coffee ice cream. Well, coffee or mint ice cream, but coffee edges it. I love coffee flavored things, but I can't have a coffee. I'll make myself an iced coffee sometimes.
No, but you got something wrong with coffee.
I know.
Coffee is lifeblood of the world. It's so good. It's so good. Do you know, though, I had the same scenario with strawberries.
What, that you like the flavour of strawberries, but you can't eat strawberries?
Oh, I absolutely detest the content, the texture. Oh, my God, strawberries. It's making me throw up in my mouth right now. I just brought that up myself as well. No need whatsoever. But I'm like... that's what pulls me now. Yeah. The day, lovely.
I get that.
I know what you mean. Sometimes the flavor of something, but I mean, the flavor of coffee is just the flavor of coffee, and hot coffee, warm coffee with a nice creamer on top. Oh, days.
Yeah. See, I just like, I think it's because I love energy drinks. So I'm always used to having something cold that gives me that caffeine boost, except tea. Like, I'm obsessed with tea.
Yeah.
I come from a big tea drinking family.
Mm.
You know, you've been to the house with the big massive teapot.
Yeah, how it should be. I mean, I'm Northern. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
It's either tea or gravy. Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, I'll have a pot of gravy and a cup of tea, please.
So obviously, you know, Monster have came out with their iced latte.
The triple espresso stuff. Yeah.
Triple espresso stuff. So I like having the vanilla one. The other day I was half asleep. About to get in the car and travel to Sheffield, and I didn't pick up a Monster. I thought it was a Monster. It was a Boost, the energy drink.
Oh, the cheap version.
Yeah, but they had like their own iced coffee. I didn't realize it was right next to the Monster one. I was half asleep. I got in the car, I tasted it. I nearly spat it out the window. I was like, what the fuck have I just put in my mouth? It tasted so thin.
Again, then.
Oh, I just swore then, didn't I?
About Mr. Eden to me. I apologise for that. If anyone has any concerns or any issues with that language used, please contact us at Aiden is an absolute idiot. on serious though, I apologise for his profanity again.
I'm really sorry for my potty mouth.
I've got to use the explicit button. I'm the swearer, and I don't think I've sworn once yet.
I don't think you have.
I don't think so. I mean, I can do now because you've already made me put the explicit bit on the on this tag. So, sod it. Let's just go for it. No, that is not the case. But yeah, I know what you mean. Sometimes it's just absolute rank and the flavour is just rubbish. But I do actually quite like the Monster stuff. I've got a real, real hankering for those iced coffee Starbucks ones. The double pretzels. Yeah, they're really tasty. Real. I tried the Acosta one. I just didn't like it. I don't know if it's if it's meant to be drank from the can. I'm not sure, but I was just like, I was a bit.
I got a tinny taste from the Costa one.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what was going on with it. If it's like, remember those drinks? What was it?
Nourishment.
No. Yeah, no. I'm thinking.
That's what I'm thinking of.
No, I'm thinking of. Remember the cans of like, what was it? Was it Boddington's that had a widget inside it to make it keep it frothy or whatever it was?
Yeah.
I was thinking it's got something like that inside the coffee, so it's meant to be poured.
Oh, right, yeah, so like obviously Guinness Draft has the widget in it.
This could be absolute rubbish and complete lies, but in essence, whenever I drink Costa, the iced coffee from the Costa can, it tastes horrific.
Also, guys, if you've tuned in for a podcast to talk about sports performance, welcome to caffeine.
Well, I said before, I joke, but I think I don't know any coaches that don't drink coffee or need some kind of, you know. Besides that, I've got to the point now where I started to bring like a little bit of a flask with me. I make my own coffee and bring it to the track. It's freezing. Oh, I need a hot drink.
Stu, next thing you're going to tell me you have a little chair, a little blanket.
I don't have a blanket, but
I've got a coat that goes down to my ankles.
I have got a full length jacket, which is lovely and warm. Thank you, Adidas. Although I say thank you, Adidas, like they sent it me. They did not send it me. I had to pay for it myself, by the way. I don't know why that sounds wrong. I should pay for it myself. But I'm not anyone. But
I'm not a sponsored coach.
Yeah, I'm not a sponsored coach. I'd love them to send me some stuff. That'd be brilliant. You know, that's money I spend on stuff. It's ridiculous. Anyway, I digress. Also, so welcome to the first 8 minutes, I think nearly 8 minutes of coffee. So let's have a chat about something else. Let's have a look. What's today's podcast?
Okay. I've got a bugbear.
Uh-oh.
All right. I think this is at you, Stu, actually.
It wasn't me. I didn't do it.
It was. I was going back listening to a couple of our podcasts a few podcasts ago when I asked you about certain training aspects and GPP and stuff and how we talked about that you see coaches do the same stuff every year. And I had a couple of people send me a message saying, hey, I thought you weren't going to do hills this year. I was like, yeah, me too. And then obviously COVID happened and obviously we had to do hills, right?
Well, okay, that's fair.
So how about you tell us how winter training's going and why you had to change and adapt a few things?
You know what, Aiden? We're not friends anymore. Okay, that's just throwing me under the bus, isn't it, a little bit? No, but it's true. Even some of the athletes mentioned that because obviously at the start of the year, the whole plan was... I'm someone who, obviously, we talked about this before, about periodization, setting a goal, working backwards from that, working out what I need to have, where they've come from, where are they going, exactly. And the problem, obviously, is that it's all relevant to whatever access we could have. So there were certain phases of training which were going to occur during the season, during the winter, where we manipulated the level of intensity that could occur whilst being on track. And using different parts of that. So basically, I use a microcycle is generally short to long. So I usually start with either acceleratory or max efforts, max speed at the start of the week or start of the period microcycle, and it progresses out through special or specific endurance or speed endurance throughout the rest of the week and ending with something usually around extensive, intensive, but predominantly the plan was to be more extensive. Which generally means just slower tempo, a bit more volume, deliberately, as we've discussed previously, to kind of modulate the training load and to work around nullifying any potential peak of the body.
Yeah.
So this was taken away from us. In reality, it was taken away. So we have to always have a plan B. And the plan B is obviously going to be dependent on what, again, access to facilities you have. Now, we've played around with hills before previous years. Some years we've done hills throughout the entire winter period. Sometimes we've done it for a small period. Now, last year was one of the first years we used it for a very specific period, very specific period of 6 weeks, which last year was starting roughly around about now. Give or take, I think it was anyway.
It was because we did one, was it Christmas?
Christmas New Year period, yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, it just comes down to then, okay, if I can't have what I want, my optimal A series of training, my short to long throughout the week, et cetera, then we have to move to different surfaces. Now, the different surfaces that the majority of the group have was grass. You know, we're on grass or we're on gravel. And the reality is the intensity cannot be as high.
Yeah.
You know, you could be, and that's probably the wrong term to use.
You're right, because especially in the weather that we're dealing with, you can't put that effort into the grass because you're just going to slip and fall on your own.
The effort level is still maximum. You know, they're still trying to attain a certain level of speed or a certain level of mechanical output. But the reality is, as we've discussed on previous podcasts, and the stretch shortening cycle and the ankle complex, the foot complex, and the fascia isn't going to be stressed as much as it would be when it's hitting a track surface in a midfoot position, putting out force through the ground as it would be. So, yes, heart rate might be high. You might be tired. Your perception might be that it's trained, but in reality, your physical intensity and physical degradation isn't going to be as high. So then I had to consider realistically, what can I do to modulate that a little bit further? So yeah, I brought back hills for a short period. I just given away that we're recording two. Oh, no, damn it. Yep, so today is still Friday. and tonight is our last session on the hills. So we've done 5 weeks of hills, not six, just 5 weeks of hills. And that's deliberate. So I've worked out how I can amend the phases that I need to do. Again, looking at where we were, where we will be, or where I can hope that we can be within the end of this week going into next week, and added that intensity back. But what I have done is I've changed the way that we do hills. So again,
I'd also like to point out that, Stu, this is a hill that no one in the group except yourself had done before, and we've never done a hill this steep before. So
exactly, that's the point. So we said about before about not doing the same thing over and over and over and over again year and year and year. Exactly. You can be on the same surface, you can be in the same session, but it can be different. That's the point. Don't just repeat what you had exactly in your diary a year ago, because that's not going to work, or it might not work. You need to make sure you've got the right context. So basically, yeah, last year we did a different hill. It was, again, a long hill for the long sprinters. We're talking predominantly for long sprinters a little bit here. The short sprinters, of course, will do a shorter version of the hills and so on. But again, depending on what they're doing for lockdown, changed actually what I had them doing. Anyway, last year we did a bit more of a fitness hill because that was the point of the season that we were at. It was where it fit within the training program. So last year they would do double hills. So you'd run the long hill and you'd jog back down, run the hill again. That'd be one set. Whereas this year, because again, depending on the difference of training that we are actually at and the requirements that I actually want from the squad and from the athletes, for the long group, they're doing single runs effectively. So they're starting at the bottom, running at the top. It's 360 meters. Good hard sprint all the way to the top. And then it's a walk back down in 8 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So the intensity is higher. On this hill, the lactate accumulation, the hydrogen ion accumulation is superbly great.
I've never felt lactic in my forearms before from running.
You know what? I don't get it. I honestly don't get that. The same thing. If my forearms need some serious work, because the amount of strain on the first rep, not even the second rep, on the first rep, my arms are gone. I don't understand it. The hill itself has.
I don't know what it was. It felt so strange. I was like, what's going on? I remember trying to take my jacket off and I couldn't. I couldn't take it off because my arms were just full of lactic.
It's mental. And I think a lot of 400 meter runners will be used to the term butt lock and things like that. And this hill, it's just beautiful. It's just beautiful. Like that second rep, you are already in what you'd term as lactic hell.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, what that's given me is the ability to add an element that does hit intensive tempo. Along with my SE2. So SE2, obviously, generically, when we talk about special endurance, specific endurance, is normally about a distance. It's usually from about 200 meters upwards, we start calling it special two, or 250 onwards, whatever, 300 onwards, depending on your terminology you want to use. I'm probably going a bit short there, to be fair. But because the length of this hill is 360, we are definitely into SE2. The time it takes is over actual 400 meter race distance. So it's taking us into the 50 seconds quite comfortably. So we are really, really hitting SE2 requirements and the intensive tempo, the kind of lactate tolerance that you would normally have. I've kind of moved away from the whole, right, we're going to do 5 300s. Or 8 200s for lactic tolerance and all this kind of stuff. Like it's kind of a little bit old school scene. And I like to play around more with the physiological side of it. So I tend to use more depletion elements now.
It's all about the chemicals.
It's all about the chemicals, baby. By adding these hills in now through lockdown, because I've had no other option really, it means that I can manipulate or change the sessions that we're going to be doing on the track and what they've had to do during the week, because they've not really had the facilities or the ability to put as much intensity in. So we've done more kind of like short recovery stuff to keep the kind of heart rate a little bit high and the effort intensity relevant. And then using the Friday session on the hill to add, the intensive / SE2.
Yeah.
It allows me to keep them short, because reality is you can't do 300s. On grass in the middle of nowhere or on a path in the middle of nowhere. So it's not going to be feasible. So to keep the distances short while everyone's away, you can find anywhere you want, do some 60s on the grass or on a road, just push it as much as you can, whatever, maybe short turnaround recovery. And then the Friday session on a controlled environment to some degree, everyone's roughly using the same hill at different points in the day. However, today we can all be together.
Oh my God.
We can all be together. So when this goes out, this would have been last week. If that makes sense. So we have now gone and done that session, but all as a big squad. So obviously squads have been training at different times throughout the day, which means that some people have the lovely warmth of the sun and some have the freezing cold of the dark.
Lovely warmth, you know, we're talking 5 degrees.
it's a big difference though, doesn't it? Just having the sun out, it's crazy. So it'll be interesting to see how everyone gets together tonight and actually manages it. So I think I know what's going to happen. The competition of just everyone being together is going to push it a little bit higher. I know we're going to have Amy in the session tonight. And Amy's been doing really well, working hard. We're not going to have Yaz tonight. But we've also got the other girls, Selena, and then all the boys. So it's going to be interesting to see how much room we take up all running up a hill together and just how everyone competes. We'll obviously split the group up, but that's why we've added hills back in, because training changed, but the plan has to change. And that's the whole point of being a coach, is to adapt. Things happen all the time. Even if it wasn't for COVID, something might have occurred a week in and I might have gone, actually, you know what? They're not where I need them to be. Therefore I need to change. But the point is, it's not the exact same. We can say hills. Yeah, we're not doing what everyone would class as generic hills. We're just not. I think for years when I was first started, and this is no detriment, it's not me being negative about it, but for years, Sunday was always hills. It was always. So since winter came around from September onwards, October through to indoor, if you did indoor.
Yeah, it was like January. January they stopped, right?
Yeah, you've done 2 sets of 8 times. It's a 170 meter hill. We all know the hill in Coventry in Memorial Park. And it'd be jog down recovery in about 60 to 90 seconds.
Mm.
And don't get me wrong, you get bloody fit. I was fit.
Great interval training.
Yeah, I was fit. I don't dispute that whatsoever. But the problem for me was, looking back on it, is that that session was then too similar to the track sessions. You know, during the week, I would then have 6 300s or 8 200s.
Yeah.
You know, so what's the difference? What is it I'm working here? I'm getting fit as hell.
Yeah. But what is the hill element actually giving us? Is it just giving us that resistance and tiring us more and making us more concentric, dominant?
Yeah, which I
yeah, which you are. But like, what's it actually giving us into our running? How's that actually helping us?
Yeah, so that's the concept, isn't it? You have to work out what your context of that session is going to be and why you want it, why you need it. It's not about just adding it in because, hey, guess what? We do hills because everybody else does hills. It's what does this hill offer me? There's no doubt that hills offer some great benefits. Like the sprint group tonight are just doing some short sprints up the hill, and again we'll have long recovery, and for them it'll be working that acceleration capacity, as well as for some of them that the concentric element that they may require. But this hill is steep, but it, for some strange reason, I've no idea why, it's probably gonna be because due to the length of it, and it hits the posterior absolutely brilliant. I mean, my hamstrings and glutes get absolutely ruined.
Yeah, I think it's the longevity of it. You're unable to, because it's so steep, you're upright earlier, and you're, no matter how fast you accelerate it, you slow down to a rate that you can't maintain that forward lean as much.
Well, this is it, isn't it? We've talked previously about posture previously, about the fact of being in a posturally correct position. And there is an element of auto-regulation again, where your body has to find its way of working, and to some degree, due to the level of fatigue, the length of the hill, the steepness of the hill, I'm not saying it's like the most perfect thing in the world ever, but at the moment it definitely has that view in my eyes. But due to all those elements, you are having to hold your posture longer. And even for myself, I feel myself in a much, on the second hill, it's not a second hill, but it's like a second bit of a climb, because it does slightly flatten out for about 20 meters in the middle. It doesn't flatten out, but it gets a little bit less steep. But that almost lets you reposition yourself into a bit more front side. And that second hill for me, I'm completely front side. I've got no backside mechanics whatsoever. I am tall, lifting my knees, getting my heels up and over my opposite leg. I'm in great mechanics. I might be running slow as hell. I am in some good mechanics, trying to then move through the position. And it's almost like, you know, when you see people running on a curve.
Yeah, on the curve mills.
And it doesn't matter how bad they are normally running. The second they go into a curve, they have no option. They go into quite relatively good mechanics.
Yeah, it's so true.
I think for some strange reason, longer hills seem to cause that exact same scenario. I think a short hill allows you to be more explosive, more push, and you know, have a bit more forward lean, but after a while you will start to equal yourself out, and you almost start running as if you are on a curve. You are going into a nice circular motion, good positive or negative, whatever you want to call it, foot contact coming back into you, and holding your posture correctly. Because if you don't hold your posture correctly, you're going to be stopping and just collapsing on the floor.
Yeah. Couldn't agree with you more there, Stu.
Yeah.
So basically,
It's
basically brought hills back in because lockdown happened. We had to change a few things, and you saw an option on how we can change the plan to get the right chemicals at a different time, so you can then give us better stuff during the week because we're getting our intensive tempo. Did you say
intensive
tempo? At a different point of the year, but then that just changes what the next phase is, I assume. Yeah?
Yep, absolutely. So it's changed. I always write down what my phases are going to look like and some of the sessions that I think are going to be quite prevalent. And over the past few weeks, that's completely changed. It's completely, because we've not been able to hit what I deemed as being required, and looking at the athletes there. And when I'm doing a couple of tester sessions now this week or even yesterday, I can see exactly where the guys are. I can kind of get some splits on their runs and see, actually, you know what, you're doing well at this or you're not doing well at that. Therefore, we can change slightly. So the next couple of weeks build up to Christmas and New Year. It's already changed. I'm not going to say what it is because that's up to us. It's up to me. But I don't, you know. But that being said, It's nothing magical, but again, I stick to my program of short to long throughout the week, and combining the energy systems as it were, but we'll change ever so slightly to start bringing on a few different requirements that the guys need.
I think that's a pretty good answer, Stu. Well done.
Thank you very much.
So yeah. Overall, Stu, would you say, even though, you know, you've had to change the program and you've had to adapt, would you say the athletes are where you would expect them to be or where you want them to be through what you've done through your winter program that you've had to adapt several times just because of COVID?
No one's ever going to be where exactly you want them to be, because in reality, you want them to be absolute balling all the time. That's not true at all. But no, looking at where they are and what they've been able to produce over the past week with whatever facilities they've had access to, I'm actually quite happy. So obviously people who know the squad or whatever know that we are predominantly aiming for Tokyo in regards for a couple of athletes who have the very strong possibility of making that team. Does not mean they will, because it's, you know, there's a lot of hard work that needs to really be done between now and then. But they have the capability of it. They have the talent for it. But talent doesn't mean anything. Talent doesn't mean a damn thing. You know, there's that old saying, hard work beats talent if talent doesn't do hard work.
Yeah.
You know, and that is absolutely true. Talent can get you to the door, but it doesn't quite get you invited into the house.
Yeah.
So it's just going to actually, you know, we've got to keep it going, keep strong, keep the work going. We've obviously got a few plans along the way for possibility of indoors. We have no idea if realistically indoors is going to happen or to what scale and if it's even going to be there. But if it does, you know, as you know, I work to a double periodization. So we always aim to peak around the end of February into March anyway, because that works for my phasing of programs, which so then we can then build back up to the summer program. So regardless of whether or not there is an indoor season, we will be running at what would be classed as a peak around that time in order for then the body to get that peak. And as we know, a double periodization has been shown to, I think it helps by about 9%, I think they've shown athletes who can do a double rather than a single actually have better peak in the summer if it's managed correctly. And that's the way I always program anyway. So yeah,
that's true. Well, there was, British Athletics did put up a post on their social media, didn't they, about February the 20th to the 21st. They're going to be in Glasgow.
Absolutely.
So hopefully that's going to be a big bonus. I don't know about local.
This is the problem, right? So obviously British champs have said they're going ahead to 20th, 21st. You are correct, in February, up in Glasgow. The European Championships have already said they're going ahead, which is the 5th and the 7th of March. All indications suggest World Indoors is still going ahead on the 19th to the 21st of March. So there is an elite level competition. Now, the problem I'm going to have is, for a few of the athletes, is are they going to be able to compete indoor prior to the British Champs? What are the British Champs qualifying going to be? Is it going to be purely based on the outcome this year? That's a little bit unfair. And then comes down to what competition is going to be indoor. Now, the problem I've got is, now this is going to sound like I'm a grumpy, grumpy old man. And quite frankly, I do not care. But basically, I would expect, this is probably stupid of me to expect it and to assume it in any shape or form. But in reality, those in charge of performance pathway or anything like that, or performance events, championships, competition at British Athletics and England Athletics should only allow, and this is going to sound ridiculous, I know, I'm sorry people, but should only really allow a limited number of senior athletes to compete indoor. Because the reality is, I know the money is in the youth, it's in the kids, right? Absolutely. You open an event up and you're going to get 200, 300 kids entering. That's where your money is. I get that. I get it. But that's not where the competition is. If you're saying you're going to have British champs and they're going to be qualifying for the European indoors and for the World indoors, then you have to allow those athletes who are senior, I'm including under 20s here, I'm including people who are going to be on the pathway, to compete. They have to be able to compete. Now, the problem is if you limit that because you're going to allow kids, whom, by the way, there are no age group championships being confirmed for. The only championships that have been confirmed for indoor are senior championships. So you have to accept this year that unfortunately the kids just can't race. They just can't race indoor. There's too many of them, and it stops the ability to allow senior athletes to run. So for me, I know this is going to sound a bit controversial, is I would limit all indoor events. I'd allow them to go ahead throughout January because you're going to need them to go out in January and February.
They've got to, haven't they?
But for me, I would say it's limited to power of 10, top 100.
What, from last year's indoors?
Generically, yeah. So from indoor, outdoor last year. So within 2020, yep, 2020, it's the standard for power of 10, top 100 allows you to enter indoor. Now, let's put it into perspective, for instance, right? That top 100 is spread throughout Scotland, Wales, England, Northern Ireland, possibly, North, South, Midlands, right? There's only a few venues available, right? So there's Cardiff,
Lee Valley,
Manchester, Sheffield, Glasgow, right? I don't know about venues in Northern Ireland, I do apologise. So the reality is, let's say 200, 400, so there's only 100 athletes who qualify. How many of those 100 athletes would actually even bother wanting to actually run? Not many, not all 100, right? But that 100 is going to be spread out. So you might get 20 at an event. That's enough for me, 4 or 5 races. Yeah. Of the athletes who actually are going to possibly step up or possibly influence or work towards the British champs, it's the only way to do it in my eyes. 100 might sound a lot, but it's not a lot when you consider that spread across the country.
Those
who are serious would drive to the venue, you know?
Yeah, the reality, I guess then it comes down to money of opening up that venue, paying for officials, and is it worthwhile for that venue to even host an event if they're not going to make any money on it?
But if you consider top 100, 60, 200, 400, 800, 15, 3K, 5K, whatever it is, plus your field events, seniors want to run. You know, I know that there's money in kids because you can guarantee they'll turn up, but in reality, there's no current performance requirements for the youth to do it. Now, I know we can argue about mental health and all this kind of thing. There's an element of the competition. But at the moment, if we don't allow our seniors at least the opportunity to race 2, maybe 3 times prior to British Champs, then those who are going to go to British Champs are only those who have already qualified, which is slightly unfair of those who are developing, who are working hard this winter to try and qualify. So that's why I say about the top 100 is then to allow people who are, you know, not quite that top level. I mean, let's be honest now, even in like the men's 400, the top 100 is still 49 seconds, I think, something like that.
That's true.
Yeah, that's still not a bad quality. And that's people who might actually step up to the qualifying time for British Champs. And you're allowing them that opportunity to do that.
My other question on that, Stu, my other point is that if you remember last year, we didn't have a lot of what we would call the top 10 athletes go to British Champs indoors because they didn't want to go to World indoors because they wanted to focus on the Olympics.
Yeah.
Are we going to see that happen again? Are we going to see this top 10 who really want to go to the Olympics not do the indoors again because they think no, or we're going to see a massive influx in indoors because they haven't competed outdoor?
Very, very true. Again, very, very possible. And that's why I think you need to kind of limit it. If it's just classes and open, for me, it's going to be horrific because you can't manage it. You're going to have to do an open just for this age group or this amount of people on this weekend and then an open just for this. And then I understand it, but it limits the amount of real competition that's actually going to occur just for the sake of money. Now, I get it. We need to have the economy going. But in reality, we need to actually put in a pathway for people to perform. I'm not saying just elites. Absolutely not. That's unacceptable. I'm saying... top 100 is elite. When we consider other sports, I've been allowed to compete at the moment, down to 100, they're going to be the ones that will or may not, or at least influence the entries for that championships. And if you don't allow them to have that opportunity, then I think we're kind of, at least not once, twice, maybe even 3 times prior to British. And the thing as well, if we actually want our seniors, the problem is we're going to have is obviously, it depends who's in charge of the performance pathway and what they deem at this point. Because they might say, well, actually, let's just focus on the elite people, get them into the overseas races, because they're the ones who are going to be going to the world and the European. Yeah. Well, that's not necessarily what it's about, is it?
Yeah. No. But it's true. You'll get what you want because of COVID. I think you will get what you want because of COVID. you got to understand, this is an indoor sport. These events are going to be indoors.
Oh, it's got to be restricted.
Going to be limited, aren't they? So it's going to be big restrictions on that. So that already limits. So I think you might be right in what they're going to get.
Yeah, but the only problem we've got is at the moment is, for some stupid reason, so of course, under 18s or under 16s can't possibly get COVID and can't possibly transmit it to anyone. you know, obviously, that the number of under 18s or whatever it is, under 16s allowed in indoor facilities, I think it's fine.
Oh yeah,
because of money, that's what I can just see it happening. I can just already see it happening because we're just not.
And then Stu, also, if just imagine if
it gets
let's say Scotland, Glasgow, just imagine if Glasgow goes into a tier three system.
Well, that's going to have to be an isolated hub, anyways. Now they're going to have to make that into some what they're calling a biosphere. It's not really a biosphere, is it? Unless you're putting all the athletes into the exact same hotel, and that hotel and all the guests
for two weeks.
You know, it's not 2 weeks. It's just two weeks, four. And it's like, well, what is it you're doing? And it's just, they've got to consider. I mean, if the British Champs is the first race for people, then we're doing a disservice. If it's the second race for people, we're doing a disservice as a sport. If it's the third race, we can get away with it a little bit. But if you don't give the athletes who might qualify, could qualify, will qualify, want to compete at British Champs at least two races prior to the British Champs, then you're not going to get the performance levels you want. And at which point then you're just going to go, oh, those who are lucky enough to have a good agent to get them onto the European circuit, perhaps, they're only going to be the ones that are going to be able to race because they've had enough races. Of course they're going to qualify. And I get it because you want your best people there. But is that what it's about? I mean, it is, kind of. But we want to open the door for those who are developing still. I'm not just saying that for my athletes, not at all. That's why I'm saying the top 100. I mean, geez, I wanted to say put it a lot shorter. But athletes are developing all the time, and if you don't allow them the opportunity, then what's the point in the sport at all? Well, we've already been let down by this whole lockdown in the first place, and the fact that I can walk down the street and see an academy. Football team or a 10th division football team still playing sport. And not only that, but their coach, their manager, their physio, their
everything, and they're not even being tested.
Is stood right there in the mix of it. And I can guarantee you now, when it comes to British Champs, the coach won't be allowed in the warm-up area again, like it was in Manchester. And yet I can watch football and see the guys hugging each other. I can watch rugby, see the guys hugging each other. I can watch cricket, which is now going ahead. And, you know, how's it? And everyone's there together. And the manager's there. The coach is there. And yet, for some reason, the guys who are in charge of athletics, no, we're not going to try and get our people together. We're not going to try and push it. Because, I don't want to rant again. This is not a rant episode. This is an episode about winter training. it's just those things, isn't it? It's just like, well, it's not difficult to consider if you just step back and think about it realistically. What do we want to do? Allow our athletes to perform. Simple as that. And that's where my winter training is coming in at the moment. So yeah, just to bring it back for the last few minutes. Everything that we're aiming for is for roughly around that time anyway, regardless whether there is an indoor or outdoor competition. So the reason why we added hills back in is so I can make sure that everyone is in the right shape, the right pace, the right speed, the right requirements that they need in order to get us to that position, in order to then take the step forward in our development throughout the year.
Yeah, perfect.
just to bring it a little bit back there. So yeah, that's why tonight is the last one, because if I go for hills too long, or if I bring the phase in or amend the phase for too long, then I've already got the adaptation I require from the hills that I needed, because this is the fifth week. I don't need it to go much longer. So I need to switch to a different training phase now in order to bring what I want by that time. Now, that doesn't mean that I won't do hills again in the new year, because I might have to, depending on how this is the knock-on effect for all this. It might be a short period purely for that intensive SE2 that we seem to have stumbled upon, because I actually really quite like it. So it might become... again, sometimes you just find stuff by accident. So it might be something that we touch upon again at some point. Hopefully it won't be until we transition to outdoor, because I don't really feel like I should need it to outdoor, but who knows?
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. All right, well, we're going to leave that there, I think.
Yeah, I think that's good to do. I think people will be satisfied with that answer.
I'm not sure, because I think we're not, I think 10 minutes of that was about coffee. 10 minutes was about 10 minutes. 10 minutes was about hills.
Indoors.
20 minutes was of a rant about athletics. I mean, geez. Oh, dear. Old man. I am a bitter old man.
We would be terrible interviewers, wouldn't we? We would not stay on task.
I'm really positive. Honestly, I love this sport. I love this sport. But sometimes I think people see a bit more common sense. Until the next time, I have been Stuart Marshall.
I've been Aidan Toomey.
And together we've been
the Sports Performance Podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you very much. And we will speak to you. We'll talk to you next time.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sports Performance Training Podcast. If you like it, please give us a subscribe and share amongst your friends or anything like that. And of course, give us a positive review. We really appreciate that. And we will see you next time for another edition of the Sports Performance Training Podcast.